and welcome to another episode of Three Wise DMs, the podcast where three dungeon masters, who've been doing this for way too long, talk about all the things we do to try to make our games as good as they can be.
Hi, I'm Tony.
I'm Chris.
Changes, turn and face the strange. Changes. Oh, look out, you rock and rollers. Changing and face the strange. Changes. Time may change me, but you can't change time.
Blue. Like you got a little Bowie on it too. Time may change.
Right. Yeah. It was like,
he'd appreciate
it. Was
that.
Like a weird,
awesome song.
Almost nasally, right? Almost nasally.
He has a little bit. He could do a lot of different things. He was a hell of a guy.
So changes. Welcome back, everybody. It's Rock and Roll DM Dave. Welcome back to another episode. And we are talking about changes today because we have, and I think, again, Tony, you could probably call me. I think I've used changes before.
I believe you have.
Sometimes it's just what has to happen. But we have a listener question today from Michael. Michael sent us in. He said, hi, guys. I just had my 10th session in my first campaign, and I've run into an issue with one of my players. We'll call him Clyde. He wants to change his paladin character into a sorcerer, but neither of us can decide how to proceed in character. How would you do this in character without breaking immersion? He started the group's characters at level 5 because he didn't want the low power and low stakes, which we understand. I actually like those times, but that's okay because you can scare the hell out of them. But Clyde had made an edgy, antisocial level 5 paladin, which that's interesting as well. I don't know what his god was, but... After a couple combats, he realized that he didn't like the paladin as a class and wanted the flavor and spell versatility of a sorcerer. They messaged out a game, decided that his character was a sorcerer the whole time, and was manifesting his own power as divine miracles. And in order to maintain immersion, Clyde would slowly change his 5 levels of paladin into 5 levels of sorcerer so he could learn his new powers. He says, though, that he feels like he made a mistake because he also had an old kobold sorcerer NPC that joined the party as a sidekick, and he wanted Clyde to be able to talk with the kobold to kind of learn this, like a way to kind of like, oh, you actually, you know, I can teach you maybe, that type of thing. And he says he thinks Clyde isn't having fun because he might think that he's pushing off his character's transformation for the past 3 weeks because it hasn't fully happened. Maybe he feels stuck because his own feelings and role-playing his character. Maybe he feels that I should initiate conversation with my NPC. It's been less than 2 days in-game, but he thinks he's running out of time in real life. He said he had come up with a solution and dialogue for it, but he wanted to see how the 3OI's DMs would handle it. And he finishes off, thanks for the podcast. I've listened many times a week. Endless inspiration and advice. So he didn't start with the tithe, but he ended with it. So
the tithe is accepted.
It was a nice little extended one. He laid a little note to the tip.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was a little long, but I think it's important because there's a lot of stuff to break out in there. So I'm going to throw it out to you guys. What do you think?
Well, my unpopular opinion, you know where I stand with pre-gen. I'm not a fan at all. But when you're doing this, this is the kind of stuff to happen. And I don't care how long you've been playing, you're brand new, or you've been playing for 10 years, you're going to run into a character that just does not gel. And you have these ideas in your head, and this is going to be great. And next thing you know, you make a charisma-based character who's playing in an undead apocalypse world, and you're waiting for a chance to seduce or persuade someone, it's just not coming up. So you want to make changes. So the question really is, how tight is the immersion/continuity in his world? And is this something he would then be prepared to handle and allow with the other players at the table?
I think, number one, calling the player Clyde reminds me of Any Which Way But Loose and the orangutan, right? He's like, right turn, Clyde. And he just punches out the window.
I don't know why in the 70s there was a rash of ape and guy buddy cop film.
That was one of my favorite movies growing up. Apparently they treated Clyde really badly and it ends up being a tragic story, but I digress. But I think this is a common feeling, buyer's remorse, related to I'm playing something. I've been playing it now for 5 weeks, 10 weeks, right? You know, every however many sessions. And I'm like, I don't know. I'm looking at the guy across the table. He's like a something else. Like, and I'm like, oh, then he's casting these spells. All I'm doing is kind of coming in here and divine smiting. But I think there is a, there's sometimes where maybe a change is definitely needed, right? And this one actually sounds like they've come up with a good story-related change where it could have some validity. And it kind of sounds cool the way that they're going to transform it. But you also kind of have to find your happy place with it. Like, your paladin's going to have some other really cool things. There's a lot of spells you can use as a paladin. We generally don't, because we think of them as a power gaming build, right? So I'm saving my spell slots for divine smite, right? But there's a decent amount of versatility. You get a good portion of the cleric's things, and especially with like your oath spells. Like, I mean, I had stuff like Dimension Door and some other things at higher levels that were really useful, right? Especially like later on in things where I could drop it and it wasn't just me running up and wailing somebody and saying divine smite, right? Like third level and roll like a handful of D8s. So I think, you know, I think there's good ways to do this, but I think it's also about finding your happy places, that maybe it's the character that you have. We've created him, so let's see where he goes. And maybe you could even multi-class into a sorcerer or something like that. But changing it for everything, if you have more than one person at the table, it just feels like, do I have to then go individually to everybody and say, hey, do you have some reservations about your character? Would you like to change it up? Because I think, I mean, even I've had, with every character that I've ever built, there has been a period in their progression where I felt like, I just don't know, right? And very often within a couple sessions, all of a sudden it becomes, oh, they're super awesome, and everything kind of gels and comes together once I find the groove with that particular character or that class.
So Tony, my first, before I kind of jump into some of my initial thoughts here, you said, I have a question, you said this is your problem with pre-gens. I'm not sure what you meant by that, because they weren't pre-generated characters that they were building. They were just building out at level 5. What was your thought there?
Well, you're skipping all the great moments of character building that helps define your character. So all of a sudden you're level 5 and you have this toolbox worth of powers and you're like, you know what? I don't like any of this.
Okay. Gotcha.
Or how the character even plays. These are also kind of, you know, you're jumping in the deep end of the pool.
Yeah. Because you don't have
the best
that
area, right, for that kind of stuff.
Yeah, you don't have that learning curve. That's actually a really good point. I didn't really think of it like that, because, you know, I don't like jumping to necessarily if it's a campaign to level 5, because I want people to kind of feel out the world and me to be able to feel out my squad that I'm running for. But the first thing that made me think of is what we were kind of talking about pre-cast, which is Scott, the Wizard Washburn. That you guys know, our terrain wrangler, he is going to be running us through. He has an idea for a campaign based off the novels of Chalion by Lois Buchwald. And he's really jazzed about it. But what he's doing is he's coming with, he's taking White Box, he's taking OD&D, and he's kind of flavoring some of the things that he likes about 5e onto that. But it's still a very, very old school OSR of the OSR system, right? I mean, we have four classes, we have four races. But one of the things that Tony, you and I talked with him about was, before we jump into a full campaign of this, and we're all very, very experienced players and DMs, let's do a one shot of like, what does this rule set even look like? And this kind of goes to your point, Tony, about like the whole kind of pre-gen, but like you don't have that learning curve. I don't know what a thief or a fighter class really in that system plays like, and I'm going to build this person out, and then all of a sudden I'm like, well, this, I don't really care for this class, and now I got a whole campaign. So I either have to like run into the breach and die so I can write a new guy or something like that, you know. But then, Chris, to your point as well, it's like when you're coming in, and it depends on the campaign, because what if I'm a cool ranger build and it's a city campaign with like politics? I'm now Aragorn in Bree, which was, again, back to the Lord of the Rings references, right? But like, that's cool until like we never leave Bree, and then I'm just like sitting in the corner smoking a pipe, right? You know, so And Chris, to your point as well, as you were saying, I was just writing some notes to what you guys were bringing up, which were good points. But it kind of goes back to your previous articles, Long Way to the Top, if you want to play a bard. And you make the point that it helps when you see other people play the classes, because you get a sense of how that class might play, and then also how I might play it. Because I remember my original paladin, one of the first characters I built in our new era of gaming, Aaron Pendragon, in like the real world post-apocalyptic campaign that Bonnie's family was running. But I had Aaron Pendragon, and I built him, and I looked at a lot of the spells, and I was like, oh, I have all these spells, and I also can swing a sword. I wasn't really playing as heavily on Divine Smites as most paladins these days, like, well, not these days, but most paladins in our groups do. One, because I really hadn't seen it, so I'm just like, cool, I'm a cool paladin with spells. But then also, you know, I just didn't know. So again, you don't necessarily know how the class plays or how you might play it.
I mean, I don't know. I have spells, and I use them very, very sparingly as a paladin, for sure. And you have that awkward phase like Chris was talking about. Like, being a level 1-4 wizard is rough. It's like your awkward stage when you're in high school before, like, you come into your personality and grow up a little bit and figure out who you are. It's like Firebolt. I mean, these are the guys who are kicking the crap out of people, and you're throwing this D10 no bonus blast down the field, and you're like, oh, the fighter just hit someone for 14 damage. Cool. 3 fire. Like, that's rough. Like, you really feel like you are behind in the game there.
And one of the points, Tony, too, if you're talking about, like, back to your point with the pre-gen or, like, the jumping in at level 5, the sorcerer at that point looks kind of cool, right? Because you weren't D6 hit dice from level 1 onwards with, like, 3 spells that you knew, right?
Yeah, he didn't get to appreciate getting in a situation where you're meleeing with a goblin and it's tough. Like, this, you're pressed. And this is an ordinary goblin, because you're sitting here with your 6 hit points and your crappy armor class and your quarterstaff. You kind of miss all of that magic. And as we said before, too, and I don't want to go off topic here, but, like, that's when you could really be threatened. Like, at level 5, you're already heroes. So you're dropping in with a hero. So I could very easily see how this happened. But back in 4th edition, you had a lot of character options, even vastly more than we do now. And something I provided in one of my games was, at their home base, they had a magical mirror, and I would allow them to basically swap out any of their power set using this mirror, which is not part of the rules. Because, you know, you would take a power set, and it would bone. It would be the worst. You'd be like, this was cool, and then you go to try it, and you realize you read it wrong, or it doesn't freaking work, or any number of things doesn't fit the flavor like you were hoping for.
Absolutely.
So you know what? Absolutely. Switch it out. And I had a fixed thing for that allowed for it. So it wasn't so, you know, painful that, like, hey, you married this feat. Sorry.
Levels 1-4 or the session 0 or the playtest, you find out how things work in the world. Like, I'm getting a paladin at level 5. I'm like a kid, and the very first car I get is like some lead-ass sports car, and I'm like, you know, this turned out to not be the car I want. You have to work your way. You have to find out how driving in the world works and getting all these things before you fully appreciate what you're getting. Like, if I give you, you know, in many ways, kind of think about like how you would tell it, like, your kids, like, well, if I give you now a sorcerer at level 5, are you just going to end up with the same thing where you're picking them up deep into the story where you're not even sure how this is going to work in the world here? You haven't really developed them. You haven't figured out how the different things work. Like, there's levels 1-4 with wizard. You really get a handle on when I'm supposed to drop these spell slots and what spells work in this world, right? Like, I think about, like, it would be the biggest challenge. Like, if, like, Rasqueto, if all of a sudden I was like, you know what? I don't want to be a bard. I want to be a wizard, right? Because now I know that these particular spells in Dragonlance would be beneficial based upon the way the campaign goes, magic in the world is, like, it provides. I think that would be really a big issue and a challenge, because you'd have to reassign those abilities, and I could then pick. In many ways, it allows you to power it up, but it lets me pick now based upon my advanced knowledge of the world, right? My intelligence versus beginning thing where you're going to get a a paragraph or a couple about Kryn and the lore and everything, but I don't know how the powers work there. Once I've been through 10 sessions, 15 sessions, now I really know how the powers work, and it can provide a thing where I'm like, I'm going to trade this out because this spell just doesn't work. And it's like, that's, a little bit to Scott's game and the 1E things. Like, at a certain point, like, you selected it, and you can move these out when the level comes up, but a certain point is finding your happy place, and I think you do that when you get a chance to grow with the character and find out how things work and slowly tune your character and get to level 5 when you become a hero rather than just hopping in as a hero. Although, it's very like you're like all of a sudden your face rip right from the beginning, right? Like you're superheroes. So I think it works better in D&D to be a little bit more deliberate in the way you level up to something like 5 rather than starting there.
Yeah, especially if you don't necessarily know how the different classes play, like you guys have been picking. But let's go even further now, kind of to the main point, main brunt of the question, which is really, how do you handle this as you, okay, so, they handled it correctly, like the player and he messaged outside of game and said, hey, there was open communication, which we always talk about. That was great. I am still waiting for Michael to tell us. Hopefully he's hearing this episode and tell me how we get an edgy antisocial paladin and like what's the god and stuff. Because that's a whole nother episode, I think.
That sounds like a build-up guy coming up.
Yeah,
now.
So I'm thinking like...
Sirik.
So there's tons of stuff that we do. We've talked about how we can narratively start to flavor different classes or changes in the game. The first thing that comes to mind for me is, Chris, in the Dragonlance game where Scott came in with Eva, who was a cleric right from the get-go, but he was playing this thing where he was a fighter. She was a Knight of Salamnia, a squire, and was not really, like, didn't know what was happening, was hiding it, didn't want to go down that route because she wanted to become a knight, and that was, like, her goal. But she's being pulled by Mishakal to this other path, and I was like, I love it, it's great. It's very different because, mechanically, we just had an agreement that he would give me a little wink, and I would know to roll certain dice for certain cleric abilities that he was playing in game, and then there was finally the reveal to the party that Eva was much more than a fighter, but that was already set mechanically. But what I'm thinking here is I can handle narratively changing, and we can go into that. We can handle narratively changing the character over, because there's a lot of things I kind of like about that, especially like it was manifesting as divine miracles, but it really wasn't. There's a lot of cool stuff there story-wise. But now I'm thinking, you are a paladin, you're transferring over your spells and stuff. Cool. What do you do mechanically, though, with the paladin who has all of the martial capabilities? And now you have a sorcerer that doesn't. So what you're also asking is for the player's character to all of a sudden either forget all that knowledge or have all of these, in essence, additional feats, like weapon specialist and great weapon fighter and these types of things to armor. Allow them to wear armor, to, all of that kind of stuff. You have to now answer that because they've been walking around swinging swords and wearing metal armor, which a sorcerer cannot do unless they take feats at 4 and 8. You know what I mean? So
probably going to be a strong sorcerer, right? Like if he's been paladin before.
So yeah. Let's just kind of delve into this. Like, as we kind of brainstorm and also what we've done in our own campaigns with this, how do you handle that type of the narrative change, but also the mechanical change? Because paladin to sorcerer is day to night, right?
No pun intended. But that basically you have two different options here.
Think it's the opposite, dude. He had this edgy antisocial paladin. I think if anything, he made like he traded up.
Maybe
edgelord paladin. I don't even understand.
So the question is, are we going to let him jump right into this and be like, okay, poof, and I could produce a story-related reason for that, how that happened, or like, congratulations, you're a sorcerer, here's your full power set, go. Or you allow them to transition over time with some story-based reasons, allowing them to pick up some sorcerer powers over time and swap them out with the paladin ones. I don't necessarily advise allowing, unless they're going to keep the first level in Paladin and start working like four levels over into Sorcerer. That, I mean, you could do that. That would keep all their armor proficiencies and what have you. Their stats won't be too bad because he's a charisma build. That makes sense. Maybe the charisma wasn't their highest stat necessarily, but you could do that, and mechanically that would jive. The question is, what does the player want? Are they, if you do the transition, they're gonna be disappointed that this is going on for, like, if I'm playing monthly, so what, by like the fall I'll be fully a sorcerer? Would, are they gonna be down for that, or do we feel like it's cheesy just making them poof, you're a sorcerer, go, he right. never wore armor, I retconned that.
Right, Tony, that was like when we talked about in the Woodstock campaign, where it wasn't about a changeover in class, but it was, we were in the dungeon, mm-hmm. right, of the Black Dragon for like 4 to 6 months in real time, because we could only play once a month, if that, because we had so many games, right? So yeah, like, and he says this, like, in real game it's 2 days, but it's been 3 weeks now. And like, what's happening with it? But 3 weeks is nothing. I mean, that's just between one game and the other,
so,
for us.
I have an example, actually. So just imagine your wizard husband that was in that campaign, who was this, you know, he was this elderly wizard. And what if who forgot all these things, was actually more powerful when he's regaining his memories? And he said to Thorn, who was running the game, said, you know what? I want him to be a barbarian instead. I mean, where do you go with that?
Right, right. Now, I think something like that is a little different in the sense of, that's where, okay, we really have to talk about this. I can see more like a paladin into a sorcerer. Like, you made the point, it's even a charisma based class, so you have that at least. It's still magically based. It's not like I'm this elderly wizard and now I have rage or something. Like, that's something rage. Where I think I would be like,
get off my lawn.
I feel like maybe you need to like exit stage left and we can introduce a different character, but that's where something, I don't think you could just switch them out, you know, for that.
I think that's legitimate, and I think they're like, to your point there, you have to have patience if you're going to have a story related change, and you're going to change something like a paladin into a sorcerer. It's going to take some time. Like, it's not going to be overnight, because the physics of it just don't work, to your point. Like, chances are he's like, he has armor proficiency, he's got all of these things. When do I give up divine smites? Do I give those up right away? Is it am I severing myself from the god now, and I'm realizing this is internal powers and stuff like that? Like, I think, you know, I think everybody, like, it's funny, I myself have pined for sorcerer there a little bit, and in the later, like the high level stuff for Scar after the campaign, Tony actually facilitated some sorcerer like powers, which I think is a much better option for something like this, where you want to be a sorcerer. Well, I'll give you a way to do some sorcerous things as you continue to level here. Maybe you find an object that gives you these basic things. I now have some, you know, some spell points and some other things like that, sorcery points, to be able to do some stuff. And I slowly build it out that way, but you're still a paladin. If not, then we're going to multi-class into it, which then absolutely you could do. I mean, with Fargrim in the further campaign, that's what I did. Eventually I went from like cleric to artificer, right? Because I wanted to do artificer stuff. And at a certain point, it wasn't going to be like, well, what do I do? Just like, I'm just going to ask for some extra powers. I'm like, let's invest some class levels into that as well. And so we kind of created some phantom leveling things where you could get that. We've been doing that, like the sort of boon levels to be able to achieve when you want to have a multi-class build. Maybe you make leveling a little bit more regular. If you're going to say like, hey, you're going to have to multi-class to get these other things. But I think there's ways to give it to you without you're wiping the character back to zero. Basically, like, if you want to be a paladin, you want to be a sorcerer, well, he's your brother, and your brother just showed up, and the paladin kind of takes off, and now your brother, you know, Bob the sorcerer, is now in the party. Hey, that works great thematically, story-wise, and everything. But otherwise, I think there's a lot of problems mechanically with changing something that drastic.
That I think one of the better ways to probably handle, and on a mechanical side, because again, I don't have a problem with doing it, because I, cool. There, it, if you say, Thorne, you say all the time, no just ends the conversation, but yes and continues the story, right? So even if the characters all die, the story's not necessarily over, unless you guys want it to be over, right? So this is great when players bring things about their character that they want to change, but you do have to balance out, because it is still a game, the mechanical aspects, the mechanics of the game and how they work. Like I brought up the point of like, well, you have a paladin who has all of these fighter abilities and a sorcerer never has access to any of them. So I think, Tony, you made the point. Cool. So we're at fifth level, maybe sixth level. Okay, keep one level of paladin and let's rewrite your character. And then you can take these other levels in sorcerer, just like a multi-class, and then we can change it over. I think that's probably one of the best ways to handle something like that, because you can't just rewrite that, well, I just forgot how to use all this, or this player now has all of this extra stuff that the other characters don't. And we talk about that a lot. There's nothing wrong with, you know, characters getting special things in the game, but you don't want to just up front load everything on one person. And then everyone else is at the table like, bro, I'm just paying like my normal thief. I don't have any boons. You know?
So, yeah, maybe I want to change my character now, right, now that I heard that he changes character. Well, you know, right, I was kind of looking at this too. And I mean, it could create something where it could just, you know, lose the narrative focus of the campaign. So.
Absolutely. And then, so mechanically, I think that's probably one of the ways that I would probably handle it, if it was something that made story and narrative sense. And like I said, Michael and Clyde had come up with a way to say, this is how we can do that. And I like that, because they were communicating on the side and they were deciding on their character things, right? On the other side of things, narratively, I think that's where it can come into play. And I would bring up the what I really started to do, and I'm trying to do it in now all my campaigns, because I love it. I actually stole it from Matt Mercer. I saw him do it, and I was like, that's such a great thing for the story. But I just took it into my concept of the out-of-game narrative stuff that I've been doing with Dragonlance, where, and this is something where you could do with Clyde on the side, so you don't have to waste a lot of game time with it. You don't have to take everyone else's time and say, okay, we're going to focus on you changing over your character thing, right? But you can do the out-of-game narrative. And for Dragonlance, what I've been doing, every time that your class got an ability that was, you not like you can now run 10 feet faster for the monk or something, but like key for the monk, right? You learn key, or divine smites for Tony's character, William, right? Rasguedo, Song of Rest, and things that were like very like mystical and magical about the class. I was writing a little couple paragraph narrative to say, this is how you kind of came about feeling this. So it made sense. Like you either learned it, you realized it from a vision or a dream. Something happened. There was an inciting incident, in essence, in some fashion that allowed these abilities to manifest themselves. So it wasn't just, I woke up and now I can divine smite. Like, sure, game-wise, that's what we do. But like the story-wise, that's when you can really make these flourishes and give that player, like Clyde, that feel like the spotlight is on me and I can have this back and forth in the narrative that I don't have to spend a lot of precious game time in making happen.
Anytime I've seen a real serious character change without anything, any type of build up, with any type of real story related reason, it has broken the immersion, at least to a point. Like it brings it back a peg. It brings you back towards, this is a sheet. You have a character that's level 4. You would like this person not to be a knight. You'd like this person to be a sorcerer. You'd like them to be a bard. It kind of like takes away from, you had this character who had struggles and hopes and plans and all these things, and now we've just, you know, changed something in one column and moved it to another column, and that's all they are. It's a sum of numbers so much on their sheet. Back in 4th edition, I keep coming back to 4th edition because I did play a lot of it. I had a wizard, and we played that from the launch, and I wanted my wizard to be like artillery. Like he'd stand back and throw these massive spells at our opponents, while I had all these other martial characters who would run in there and melee with them. And it turns out a 4th edition mage is much more like a controller. Actually, they literally are. So they would put that monster to sleep, for my example, versus smashing them with like a giant meteor that comes down from the sky. Well, that comes much later, but generally you don't get that. So what I really wanted to be retrospectively was a warlock. So I told this to Thorn, who was running that game, and what he did was he started introducing these Lovecraftian items that allowed me to have some type of warlock powers. There is a mechanic in fourth edition that allows you to take your feats and then gain some out of, it is similar to 5e, but this goes deeper. Like, you can take higher level feats, swapping out different abilities as you go down your career path. And that kind of then became a driving force that my wizard was seeking out these secrets to fill out his character and be more of that persona that he wanted.
Yeah, we have spoken many times of the travails of Cassidus and him turning into a pile of undead bugs, I believe, correct?
That was off script, yeah. I did not expect it to go that way. But good luck fucking killing me as a larva mage. I mean, really, I'll smash you with a hammer. I just scatter. Like, you know, I'm everywhere. I'm in the carpets. I'm in the rug. It's disgusting.
I think you make a good point. Is like, we often go through things, and I think that's part of the thing. Like, if you want to be a sorcerer, well, it's going to take time, so you might as well just sort of multi-class into it. Like, I mean, I think about it, like, I wanted to be a rock star, right? And then I wanted to be a chef for a little while. And then I wanted to be a music teacher. And then all of a sudden, I ended up as a software developer. And then it ended up being okay, right? Like, and it wasn't as, I don't know if it's as fulfilling, like if I was like a rock star playing on huge stages, but it has that same level of thing. And I think it's about developing your character. If you reach a point and you're like, hey, you started at fifth level, and by sixth level, I'm like, you know what? I really don't like a paladin. Well, multi-class into sorcerer, or let's start introducing some things. But everything sort of happens on top of what you've already experienced, right? Your character is here. You've developed him. He has all the hopes and dreams. He's a living person inside of this, you know, game construct. So let's just enhance him a little bit. Let's move him on. You're a paladin no matter what. Like, unless you develop amnesia and some kind of wasting disease, like, you're a paladin here. So let's make you a paladin. And then you kind of changed a little bit. Maybe you started off and you were really into the divine things, but then maybe it turned into something else and you realized it's all internal, right? You kind of moved away from the gods a little bit or something like that. But it can be a story, but it's going to take time, and it's going to have to be, as he says, it's already been a couple sessions. So you might as well just start investing that in new levels in sorcerer, or in helping them to slowly turn their things and providing them sorcerer powers and staying in a paladin sort of class with some sorcerer bits that you're getting from items or from, you know, interactions with your god, where he's imbuing with you with internal powers versus something that you have to call out for that sort of resemble, you know, sorcery points and stuff like that.
Nothing wrong with that. I would say, though, in defense of it, though, that, because it was a good point that, you know, you in our own lives, we kind of go through these stages where we want to be this, we want to be that, and we end up wherever we end up with life. And that's absolutely true. And story-wise and narratively, yeah, that's absolutely true. But in game-wise, like, we come to D&D and things like that so that we can kind of play out these, so I don't have to. Tony, it goes back to some of our conversations about, like, well, like, if I want to, like, learn how to wield a longsword, like, I can take that feat. But, like, are you going to make me train for 2 years to truly be, like, an actual, like, you know, I mean, in real life, you have to, you know, you don't just learn karate in a weekend, right? You know, like, you have to become, like, you have to spend time. But in game, that doesn't always play out, especially game frequency, things like that. And you want to have this fantastical thing. But those are excellent points. I wouldn't have a problem myself retroacting in this, like, with this idea of Clyde. Retroacting it from level 5 and saying you're keeping a dip in paladin and you have these levels in sorcerer, and we have to explain it, because that opens up a lot of story. Not only, Chris, like you said, what happened to all the paladin stuff? What happened to the god that you were pulling this divine stuff from? I wouldn't say that's just off the table, because there's all kinds of things that could happen there. Maybe the god was a different type of god, a god of trickery or something, and was like messing around. Who knows? There's nothing but story there that you can start to tease out over the next however many levels. But anyway, I think it's probably about that time, though, for some final thoughts for Michael. So changing over a character in his campaign, a paladin into a sorcerer around level 5, possibly 6, and how do you handle that? Some final thoughts, guys.
Well, you know, you want to keep the continuity going. You need to keep that immersion. So, like, what are our options here? It's your brother who may have rolled in from town and the person's going to go do some other career path and leaving the party? Did a magical item or effect of great power, which has to be part of the story, do a clean changeover? Or are you doing this multi-class idea that we are kind of prescribing? With the this clean changeover, the question then is this – so I'll make this cut and dry. I think it should be available to everybody in your party. I couldn't be like, well, you know, Bonnie could completely change her character, but I have a character who I feel is mediocre and I want to make adjustments, but I can't make any adjustments. That opens up that entire can of worms. Ideally, you know, that's something you talk about at the beginning of the campaign before you start. But, like, you know, these things happen because, like, let's be honest, campaigns go on for what on average? A year to 2.5 years? We've had campaigns go 4. So, you know, you're thinking about this character who you're going to play. When I started playing Erasmus at level 1, you know, that's completely different. The amount of twists and turns that take place, you can't predict that this is going to be where you want to be or it's what you're going to like, especially as you're learning these new powers.
Starting early, you get an idea. You develop a relationship with the character. You get some idea of what you want to be. But I think he's doing it right. Like, I think he's taking care of it in the right way where he's talking with the player, he's going through the things. There's a story-related change. I just think it's difficult to throw away what you've already done there. Like, I don't think you have to throw that away. I think we can start thinking of you as a sorcerer now, but you were a paladin for the first couple levels there, right? Like, it's part of what you are there. Let's not throw that away. I think it can work equally well because there's going to be some patience with changes like this. If you're going to that, because it's a group game, if I'm playing one-on-one with Tony, we can accelerate the hell out of that, right? But if I'm playing at a group of a table there, I have to be concerned that Dave's character now, when he hears about this, he's like, well, you know, I kind of wanted to start to do this, or I was wanted to think about my character this way. And I think you need to, once you open this up to somebody, you have to kind of open it up to the table. So I think that good patience, story-related changes, but it's the scheduling bug, right? I want the change to happen now, but we only play once a week, once a month, once a year, whatever, for some people, unfortunately, right? So, you know, your patience has to be in game time versus actual real life time in playing that game, right? If it's like, it's like leveling. Like, if we only meet every once in a while, very often we'll speed it up a little bit, right? But you can't speed it up too much, right? There has to be some level of you've achieved this, you've kind of gone on to your next thing. So I think, like, in many ways, he's doing it right. Keep talking about it, keep yes-anding, but be concerned because the mechanics would get really, really weird. And you'll come up with paladin with some sorcerer powers where I can all of a sudden have 4 levels of sorcerer is like changes the power curve of that and makes for something different. So it's, keep it focused on the story and find your happy place with your character. It's, you know, give it some sessions there. You know, you're going to reach, there's going to be times where you're not shining when the dice rolls aren't going your way. Find your happy places and kind of go with that. Like, there's a, you know, you can always tweak your character, but very often you'll find that within a couple sessions you're back in love with your build there. It's very often just a little bit of buyer's remorse or just the natural flow of the campaign.
So I'm going to go back to the thing I didn't understand in the beginning, but makes excellent sense that Tony had said about low levels. The reason that level 1, you know, you start generally, I think the biggest I've done is I started a campaign at level 2 because I wanted everyone to have 1 level of fighter because it was a gladiatorial type of thing. But outside of that, it was still low level play. And one of the biggest reasons is, one, you can scare the hell out of them and make them understand the world, you know, so they're not just power gamers right from the start. Yeah, but you understand the class. You can understand, okay, I do or don't like how this kind of play. I thought it was going to play out this way, but it didn't. Again, that doesn't really matter now because you started where you started. There's nothing wrong with that. I would say I think we probably say it once every single episode. We talk about session 0, but it's because it's so important and we have started to do it so much to the point even with Scott's campaign. We said do like a whole separate game that's a session 0 almost. Session minus 1 because you have it's a whole different rule set even though it's D&D. Like, we don't even know how these things play, and we don't want to make choices that we don't even know what choices we're really making, right? It's like the Ranger in a City campaign. Doesn't really help if Aragorn never leaves Bree. And I would say in terms of, so mechanically we talked about, but narratively, I hit it all the time. I say use the narrative side story stuff. I think it's great. If it's, I mean, if you're not a writer or something, then it's probably going to be a freaking chore. But it's a great way to not have to spend game time, precious game time, for one character's story build. But even if it's not a whole story, you can literally just, like you were doing, message between them. And in essence, that's creating some of that narrative. There's at least reasons that things are happening. But my final thought is, if you have a paladin and a sorcerer, they have completely different hit dice, right? So I'm thinking if you had like paladin dice and sorcerer dice, but that means you need more dice. And that is an excellent segue to say for our affiliate link at FanRoll Dice. So that's a head over to fanrolldice.com/REF/2871. From that point, you can enter the code 3WISEDMS10. That's the number 3WISEDMS, the number 10. That gives you 10% off your whole order, so which is pretty sweet. And they got pretty great dice, too. That's going to be it. We are this was a listener question, obviously, and we take listener questions. We are DMs with problems. We love to help DMs with problems. You can please send in any questions you're having, any thoughts, any brain farts, whatever. Send them in here, the 3WISEDMS@gmail.com. You can reach us at 3WISEDMS.com. Enter it in the What's Your Problem field. I always used to say it's like very New York. Hey, what's your problem? Hey, you know. But you can also reach us on Facebook and Instagram. We are very active on those sites. We're always engaging there. Michael, thank you again for the question. That's going to be it for us for this week. And as we do each episode, we are going to let our dear old erstwhile leader take us out.
Thank you all who are listening from home for listening to another episode of 3WISEDMS. We really appreciate the support. If you like what you're hearing, please give us a 5-star rating in your podcast platform. That kind of thing really helps us get the word out. If you'd like to hear us answer your question, go to 3WISEDMS.com, enter in the What's Your Problem field, or send us an email at 3WISEDMS@gmail.com, or you can talk to us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We're active on all those channels, and we're, you know, in this one alone, we talked about one comment that came in through the website and another comment that came in through Instagram. So we love it when you ask us questions that we can answer on the air, and we'd love to help you with your problems whenever we can. Or at least maybe just talk and give you some perspective, or you just hear us ramble about them and crap we've seen players do.
Listen, it clears your mind of problems.
Yeah. If nothing else, we can commiserate, all right?
Yeah, it's like a weird form of ASMR. It just calms you.
We do. We love getting your questions and being able to help you with your actual problems. So keep sending those. And that's it for this week. We'll see you next time. 3WISEDMS.